And we are live. Okay, we're talking about eldership today. So let's just proceed. I use the word origin as in when do we see this word first. This is the Hebrew word, and I'm going to show you some passages where it's in and what it means. I took this definition. It's a pretty standard definition. It's not the only definition, but I wanted to give you a place to start. Now, this is the first time this Hebrew word shows up in the text, which is Genesis 18:11. And we're very familiar with this passage. Abraham and Sarah were old. So that's what the word means. It means old. It doesn't mean that they had some type of authority position in their local assembly. It's just not there. Can't find it in the text. They were the local assembly, probably. I don't know. There were some other old guys in there, too. Here are the other places where this Hebrew word shows up in Genesis. That's a few, maybe a dozen. And in each case, if you look at these, the way to understand the text is the person was old. My father was old. Jacob, who had a lot of days and was old and was an assembly leader. Right, okay. So this is the word. And in Genesis, when I looked at all the passages, I felt like the word old was a very good translation of the Hebrew word. In each case, the Greek presbyteros. How many people have heard of the Presbyterian denomination? Yes. Well, this is where they get that from, the presbyteros. And they're old, old. It means old. Yes, Dave? Oh, okay. Thought you had a question about old. Like, is there a line of demarcation? Okay. We're going to come back to this Greek word, but I have to show you one other Greek word so that you can just... Because if you go look this up in the Septuagint, then you can say, well, how come you didn't mention this Greek word? So let's go ahead and do that. Exodus is our Torah portion. This is 3:16. Go and gather the elders. What took place in verse 15? This is my name. This is the memorial that people will know me by going forward. 16, go, gather the elders. Gather the old people? Gather all the old people of Israel together and say unto them, all right? And the Greek word there is gerousion. It's a completely different Greek word. We'll talk about it in a second. Let me give you verse 18. And they will hearken to thy voice, and thou shalt come, thou and all the old people of Israel, unto the king of Egypt. Probably not. Greek word, once again, is gerousion. Here's what it looks like. I use Freiburg because this is not a heavy lifting issue. It occurs in Tanakh 30 times. It only occurs one time in the New Testament, and that's in Acts 5:21. And it is a council of elders like the Senate, especially the Sanhedrin. And this is the only place in the New Testament where this word shows up. So therefore, it is not going to be my focus because of how often the other word shows up and the emphasis that is with that word. So, yes, I know about this word. No, I don't care about this word. Okay? The Greek word that we're going to deal with is presbyterios. It occurs 69 times in the New Testament. We're going to look at quite a few. And context reveals how to interpret it because sometimes, as you just saw in Exodus 3:16 and 18, it doesn't really mean to gather all the old people and go to Pharaoh. All right, so we're going to work through the context. Let's take a look. Numbers 11:16. Yahweh said to Moses, gather unto me 70 of Israel's old people who are known to you as leaders and officials among the people. So now we're having some differentiation. Bring them to the tabernacle congregation. Let them stand there. Because what's going to happen is some of the spirit that was on Moses was then going to be placed on them. Okay? Not in them, on them. So here we can see the Hebrew word is there in 11:16. Zakane. Deuteronomy 27:1, Moses, with the elders of Israel, commanded the people, keep all the commandments which I command you this day. So here, it looks like we could be talking about something more than just the old people. Deuteronomy 1:9-18, I'm breaking this up into pieces. I'm not able to bear the burden of these people alone. Choose wise and discerning and experienced. Here's the command. Choose wise and discerning and experienced. And I will appoint them. Who's doing the appointing? I will appoint them. He does the appointing. As your heads. You answered me and said, the thing which you have said to do is good. So I took the heads of your tribes. This is Moses talking to the people. Wise and experienced. And appointed them heads over you. What do we see in the Torah portion today? Exodus chapter 18. Leaders of thousands, hundreds, fifties, tens. Officers for your tribes. Then I charged your judges at that time, hear the cases between your fellow countrymen and judge righteously. Also, judge the aliens righteously. So do it right. The case is too hard. Bring it to me. I will deal with it. If you remember, Moses' father-in-law was talking about teach them how to walk. Teach them what's required of them. And then if there's really some things that are really tough, let them bring it to you. So that was what chapter 18 was talking about that we just did today. Another place where this shows up, and you're familiar with it, is Joel 2:28. It says, I will pour out my spirit. Your old men shall dream dreams. Your elders shall dream dreams. Probably old men, since the contrasting phrase is young men see visions. It's probably old men. And if you look at the Greek translation in the Septuagint, it happens to be the same as in Acts 2:17, where this passage is quoted as Presbyterius. Your old men shall dream dreams. So this is where we see the alignment. The New Testament authors understood this was the Greek word that spoke to the Hebrew word, where it could sometimes be translated as old, it could sometimes be translated as elders of a position of authority. All right, let's continue. The Septuagint, we're all very familiar with it. King Ptolemy II sponsored the translation for use by the many Alexandrian Jews who were not fluent in Hebrew, but fluent in Greek. When he pulled this together, who did he ask for? 72 elders, 6 from each tribe. Now, these elders had to be knowledgeable in Hebrew, knowledgeable in Greek. They'd have to know the meaning of the Hebrew so that they could write the interpretation into the Greek text. So these were some top dog elders here, 6 from each tribe. They may have been old, but they were definitely qualified. All right, let's go over to the New Testament. Like I said, it shows up 69 times, and it generally means of greater age, because sometimes it's used in a contrast. Most of the time it occurs in the masculine. In 1 Timothy 5:2, it occurs in the feminine form, which is a specific form. Masculine includes feminine, but feminine usually stands alone. There are exceptions like 1 Corinthians 13, but generally speaking, that's how the New Testament exists. And in this particular case, it's talking about the Presbyterian women as mothers, and where's your contrast? The younger as sisters. So here we see older, younger contrast. That has nothing to do with an office. No office here. 1 Peter 5:5, likewise, you younger, submit yourselves to those who are older. Of course, that's within the conjunction of all of you be subject to one another, which has its own set of rules. But in this particular case, we have another contrast that lines up with the feminine use in 1 Timothy 5:2 and the masculine use in 1 Peter 5:5 that has nothing to do with an office. It has to do with the recognition of age, experience, and maturity. In 28 times in the New Testament, this word is used for spiritual leaders of Israel. I've got a couple of examples. Not that we need them, but let's just do them anyway. Matthew 27:3, Judas, which had betrayed him, when he saw that he was condemned, repented and brought again the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and the elders. This particular case, it's probably not the old people of Israel. It's an office. Luke 22:52, Yeshua said to the chief priests and the captains of the temple and all of the old people which came with them. Probably not. Context here, it probably has to do with those who are recognized leaders in government. So this is another case of how the word is used. Now, here's an important point to keep in mind as you see this word. There were different types of spiritual leaders in Israel. And in this particular case, they are not priests. They are non-priest leaders, non-priestly leaders. The elders are non-priestly leaders. All right, Matthew 15:2 shows another example. This would be a historical type reference. This also occurs in Mark 7. Why do the disciples transgress the tradition of the elders? What do we have here? Refers to principles passed down by those who were recognized as some type of authority over a group of people. Perhaps they were related by blood. But at some point in time, they had to be recognized as pretty major because it became a requirement as part of obedience of the oral Torah. So this is another example of where elders are used, and it's probably not talking about old people. Of course, in Revelation, it occurs 12 times, and it's talking about the elders who are around the throne. You've heard of it, the 24 elders around the throne. It is the same Greek word, presbyterios. I put this in because everything that's in the New Testament is written by Jews thinking with a Jewish mindset, looking for a messianic eschatology and establishing themselves after synagogue practice using terms that are recognized by fellow Jews within the Greek culture. It's all based on Jewish, Israel, history, Hebraic. Everything comes out of that. All right, so I wrote, since they were organized to some degree as Jewish, it follows that when referring to one who was in leadership but was not an A, priest, or B, a king, elder was the most commonly used Jewish term. If we wanted to explore this more, I did look at the history. I decided to leave it out. You can look at the grave reliefs of the first century, and you will see how this Greek word is used in those particular tombs. And it was the word that was used most to recognize elders. Okay, quick review of qualifications. We read some in our Torah study today in chapter 18. And there are some other places where it shows up, and I've got a couple here that I'm going to share. This is one. In this particular case, mature men, head of families, strong moral character is very important, fearing God, possessing truth and integrity. So this is stuff. This is established stuff. People can look at this person and say, yes, I see those traits. No, I don't see those traits. Men who were specifically given some of the spirit that was on Moses, we covered that in Numbers 11. Deuteronomy, men of wisdom. These are people who have not desire wisdom, but have shared wisdom, have pointed out things that is wise. They are able to discern in situations. They have experience. Age helps in that. They are impartial, they're courageous, they teach, They judge righteously and fairly. This is what the Old Testament says the elders were. The use of the term to describe assembly leaders emphasizes the maturity of their spiritual experience. In other words, you've been in this 3 years, you don't qualify. Sorry, it's just the way it is. Because there's just things that you have not experienced yet. Just as an example, Jackie and I were in this for 15 years, and I was a national speaker for 8 years before we even formed this assembly. Okay, so I'm just saying that to say that based on what I'm seeing, both testaments, it looks like you're talking about people who've been walking the road for a while and had some experiences in their life, and they've proved themselves through testing. That's what I'm seeing, generally speaking. Okay, it's used nearly 20 times in Acts and the epistles in reference to a unique group of leaders in the assembly. Now we're going in. Here we go. We've had the wide view. Now we're going to drill down and look at some specifics. This first one is very important, too. This is Acts 11. That's why the 11 is in a different color. I'll read these two verses. Then the disciples, each according to his ability, decided to provide help for the brothers living in Judea, which they did, and sent it to the elders, using Paul and Barnabas as the couriers. Okay? Now, let's talk about New Testament history. We've got Peter, first year, first month, at the temple. That's Acts 2, 3, 4, 5. Then 6, you've got the rebellion of the Hellenistic group, so they set deacons into place. Then when you get to 8, Paul's on the road. Then you get to 10, you've got Peter is in Joppa, and the Spirit, he goes up to meditate on a roof, and he gets a vision about stuff in a sheet, and then he goes out to Gentiles, which the tradition of the elders, I might add, was opposed to, and he goes and testifies about Yeshua, and then they accept it. So then he has to come back. Well, they baptized, and then he has to come back. That's chapter 11. He comes back, and he's explaining to all the Jews about, let me tell you what happened. You got to hear what I got to say because of what this. I did this because this is what happened. And he explains the whole thing in detail again. And then we pick it up later in chapter 11. So this is early. This is early, early, early in the establishment of what is going on in assemblies in Judea. We've got elders in the Jerusalem assembly already. The already elders are established in leadership positions. So I thought that was good. Now let's go to Acts 15. Not that much further down the road. We have some concerned Pharisees that think that we need to keep the oral traditions of the elders. That's verse 1. Verse 2, they get into a big discussion about it. And what is the decision? It is determined that Paul and Barnabas and certain others should go up to Jerusalem to the apostles and the elders about the question. And when they will come to Jerusalem, they were received of the assembly and of the apostles and the elders. 6, the apostles and the elders came together to consider the matter, not just the apostles. The elders were called in to sit with the apostles to discuss this humongous decision that was about to be made that was going to affect the end of this age. Okay? The biggest decision that could be made in all of Christendom of all the centuries was this decision. And the elders were asked to come in to consider the matter. That's major. All right, so we know what happened. Peter, Paul, James, and the big four. We know what happened in that discussion. So after the decision is made, and they're told that it's going to be okay because Moses is preached in the synagogue every Sabbath. That's all reserved in verse 21. What does 22 say? This pleased the apostles and the elders. So everybody's pleased. Okay? 23. They wrote letters. And the apostles and elders and brethren sent greetings unto all the other folk. Okay, you see the role of elders here? This goes to the end of the century. We know John was exiled to Patmos. Well, after the emperor died, he was released from Patmos. Where'd he go? He went to Ephesus. Now we're at the beginning of the second century. What does it say that John did? He went through all of the assemblies in Asia and set elders into office for every assembly in Asia. That's the historical record of the early second century. So eldership was not just under Paul or during the time of Paul. It continued with the other apostles all the way into the second century, including Polycarp, Polycrates, all the way to the end of the second century into the third century. The eldership was in position. Now, they got some corruption, which we're not going to deal with today, but I'm just saying that at the beginning of the second century, after John was released from exile, he went to Ephesus and then set up elders in all the assemblies. Once again, that's big. That's the model. All right, let's talk about bishop and pastor that is not an elder. Or is it? Here's the word. The bishop Greek word is episkopos. How many people have heard of the Episcopal Church? That's where they get their denominational name. Pastor. How many people heard of the word pastor? Comes from the Greek word which means to shepherd. The Greek word is P-O-I-M-E-N, poimen. It's next to the word pastor. Poimen. It's translated shepherd. I'm going to give you an example. We want to know what is the relationship between the elder and the bishop and the pastor. Here it is. Elders, which are among you, I exhort. It's Peter talking. I'm also an elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ and a partaker of the glory that shall be revealed. Okay, don't worry about that. Peter, I'm an elder. Shepherd, pastor the flock of God, which is among you, taking the episcopic thereof, not by constraint. See what it says? So, he's talking to the elders that they need to shepherd the flock of God. Let's break it down in simple terms. The elders which are among you, that are established in this assembly, I exhort, care for and look after the flock, which has been set under your care, exercising oversight, not because of compulsion, but voluntarily accept what has been put in your, control maybe, according to the will of God, so everything is in subjection to the commandments of God on how you relate to the body, not for dishonest gain. Elders can receive gain, well-established, multiple scriptures, but not, you don't take the office of elder so that you can fleece the sheep. Okay? That's not what you're doing. So, elders, pastor, the flock that God has put you over, exercising oversight to help them be what God's calling them to be. So, how does the elder and the bishop and the pastor relate? They are the same person. See another one. Let's not just do one. Let's do two. Acts 20, verse 17. From Miletus he sent to Ephesus. He called the elders. Take heed, therefore, to yourselves and to all the flock over which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers. What are you to do? Feed the assembly of Elohim. So here it is again. Elders, take heed. Because the Holy Spirit has made you responsible, and you need to make sure that you are doing what you can do to feed the body that Yeshua himself purchased at a great price. Responsibility of elders. And you can call them bishops. I'm not using the bishop word because of the baggage. You could call it pastor. I'm not using the pastor word because of baggage. Both words are legitimate words. I'm just not using them. I'm using the word elder. We could use the word pope. Probably not, but we could make up a word. I made up a word. I started out as congregational leader because when I first started this, you people weren't here. None of you were here. But now we're going to go with the term that is more New Testament friendly. All right, I've put up a chart. Hope you can read it. You can read it because you'll get the PDF online. On the left side is 1 Timothy 3, and on the right side is Titus chapter 1. And what this is, it is the qualifications for men and women to serve as elders or to serve as bishops. So it is using the different Greek word. I want to be clear on that. But as you go down the two lists, you will see that it is very much identical. It's the same thing. And don't be concerned about the fact that the list is not exactly the same because Paul was not creating a manual. He was just giving some information. In other places, he says other things. So you got to put the whole thing together. But I put this together because it makes it simple to see that the same thing was required of these people. And you already saw the verses where they were used together. So you would be able to work through that. Let's continue. I'm trying to make this simple to grasp. Those who would lead God's people must exemplify purity, sacrifice, diligence, and devotion. Elders are charged with teaching, feeding, and protecting. One of the things that I did find interesting, I'm just mentioning, is that almost in every case where elders are discussed, teaching is the big requirement. Teaching is the big requirement. Now, everybody has different gifts. People fill different ministries. Over time, that can change because maybe you have somebody doing several ministries, and then people come in, and after a period of time of being proven and blah, 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 then a piece of that can be handed off to them. And so this particular elder's doing less, and now we have people that are over here doing things. But the place where it never changes is teaching. And everybody is in the process of learning to teach better, to teach more complete, to teach more expansive, to have the big view as well as the detailed view, to learn more about the Greek, learn more about the Hebrew, learn more about the text, the history of the text, the history of the people. Everybody who is an elder says, I'm going to learn these things so that when I share, I am bringing the full revelation of God to the people. It's part of the responsibility. Hebrews 13:7. Remember them which have rule over you. Consider the result of their conduct. In other words, we're supposed to be an example. You need to be able to look at this person and say, are they really paying the price? Are they really carrying their load well? When I see them, what am I thinking? You know, imitation. Consider the result of their conduct and imitate their faith. Roles. Not the kind we're having for dinner. Hint, hint. No rolls tonight, people. I don't know. We may be having rolls. I know we're having Russian. Okay. The elders should not operate by majority, rule, or vote. They should be unanimous. We're supposed to have the mind of Christ. I know corporations and some other businesses operate by majority. And I'm not saying majority is bad. I'm saying from what I understand of having the mind of Christ and understanding the scriptures, if you are an elder, that means that you have proven yourself to be at a much higher level at this time than, say, new people that are coming in who will one day reach that level, but today they're not at that level, but you're at that level. And so you should be hearing clearly. You should be making decisions. Does that mean you don't sin? No. Does that mean you don't miss God? No. But when the elders come together to make major decisions concerning the flock, there should be a focus of we've been given an honored position, and we need to make sure that the decisions that we're making is going to be for the benefit of this body type mindset. That's where it's got to be. That's why I think Unanimous is a good place to go. And you know, let me tell you a story about Unanimous. If you remember, in 192 AD, when Victor was the Bishop of Rome, and he wanted to establish Easter as the day of observance for all assemblies, and so he sent out a letter to all the assemblies in the world saying, this is what we're going to do. And he contacted the leader of the assembly in Ephesus, his name was Polycrates, and said, call all your guys together and discuss this. And they got together and discussed it, and it was elders and other leaders of all the assemblies in Asia came together to discuss whether or not they would continue to observe Passover or if they were going to switch to Easter. And in the letter that Polycrates wrote back to the bishop in Rome, he said, and we have agreed unanimously that the gospel is the Torah, and we're going to continue to observe Passover, and we're not going to make any changes. And it was a unanimous decision from the elders of all the assemblies in Asia. That's the story of Unanimous. And I think that should always be the goal, because I like that. Differentiation. Just because one person, one of the elders, works full-time in the administration of the business details, website, public relations, minor financial matters, other particulars of day-to-day operation, does not cause them to be above the other elders when oversight and shepherding of the flock is involved. See what I'm saying? I'm currently the one who's working full-time in this assembly. I handle a number of things, a massive number of things, day-to-day. But when it comes to something that is of a high level that affects the entire assembly, I am only one voice of all the voices. I do not have any precedence. I do not carry any additional weight. I am not the final word. We all need to come together to meet something, and I'm just another guy. See how that works? Looking at elders as an assembly grows and there are elders who are added to the assembly. Some are going to be highly visible. There'll be others who will work in the background. That's just the way it is. You need the background people. You need the front ground people. It doesn't mean anything when it comes to the authority to make decisions that concern the oversight of the assembly and the health of the body. You see the difference I'm making here? You know, it's kind of like, do I consult the elders about what meal I'm going to make? No, I do not. But I could. But I don't. And I have delegated. I said, would you like to make this meal? Would you like to make a meal? In over 3 years of making multiple meals every month, I've given it out a couple times. Okay. Now, what does that mean? That means I don't trust you people when you cook in your kitchen. So this is not one of those things where we have to be unanimous. Okay. Once again, handling lesser things that are important is one thing. Handling things that affect the health of the body is different, and it requires everybody to come together. So I'm just saying, yes, I'm visible. Yes, I was the congregational leader that is now an elder if you look at my signature. My wife and I started this, but we've been doing this for a long time. So we made a lot of decisions for the assembly early on before you people were ever here. And that's okay. But now as we go forward, other people are involved. And I don't know if you know this or not, but there have been a lot of changes that have taken place because people and elders have come and said, have you considered this? Have you considered this? And I've made a lot of changes to accommodate what everybody wants because I feel like that's what I'm supposed to do. But see, now the decision doesn't rest with me anymore because I'm not the final word. Okay? I'm just one of the gang. All right? Now, I had mentioned this before. Generally speaking, an elder cannot be a new convert because you just don't have the experience. You don't have the experience for the attacks of the enemy. You don't have the tricks of what takes place to try to expose. Everybody comes into this and they've got, what did you say today? The history of Israel. Walking through the desert is our lives as we flesh out. Well, a new convert has not had a chance to express being squeezed. Got to have some time to do that. And then people who are in a position have to have time to examine that life and evaluate qualifications. And then let's say that you are the purest of the purest and you've got administration skills out the gazoo and you can't teach, you don't qualify. Because you can have all of it, and if you can't teach, you don't qualify. So, continuing. With the exception of where the two apostles used the term elder, we saw one of these, they referred to themselves, I also being an elder, you saw that verse. In every place, it's plural except for two. And that's where they are calling themselves an elder. Obviously, that would be singular. All the other places, it's plural. So it's not just one elder. Maybe it's, for Jackie and I, it was two elders to start this assembly. Well, that's all we had. It was us. That was us. It was it. We were the meeting. Okay? So there was two elders. There were two attendees, you know? But in these other places in the scripture, it's always in the plural. So it's easy to come away with an understanding that there were multiple elders in all of the assemblies. That's what I'm coming away with. Now, the next thing about elders in the New Covenant, this is not an office for life. You have to qualify daily. See, if you look at the Old Covenant, you could be the most evilest king or priest since creation. It's irrelevant. You stay in office and you still operate until the Almighty Himself removes you. That's not the way it is in the New Covenant. You have to be on the stick. Got to be on the stick. You have to stay qualified to be an elder. Okay, in most instances, some sharing of the same responsibilities, some specialize as their calling dictates. So, I put some examples up there. You have to be able to teach. That's just the way it is. And you have to be teachable, and you have to be increasing in your ability to teach and expound and include all things. And be able to present them so the people can grasp them. I mean, there's a lot involved here, folks. A lot here involved. But then there are other things which, like, for example, I also have an ability in what I call the technical arena that I don't ask anybody else to do. But I started learning this in the 70s. And I had doors that opened for me, and I went through them, and I learned. And I eventually got to a place where I had technical skill and then could go in and do certain things. Well, one day somebody else is going to come in here and is going to have the same technical skill that I have. And I'm going to be able to say, okay, here's the vision. Execute. And I'm not going to have to tell them how to do it. They can do it. Today's not that day. But I'm just saying. We all have those other gifts and abilities and talents and whatever other words you want to use, which is good because the body needs them. But teaching is the default. You got to be able to teach. And once again, just because somebody has a different responsibility doesn't mean they're higher. Maybe, let's say we had elders who were good at counseling. Well, that's where the counseling probably needs to go to. And let's say that they raised up other people who could do the Moses thing with the thousands and the hundreds and the fifties, and they had some other people who could do intermediate counseling, and then the hard cases went to them. I can see that working. But then you don't. The whole thing is contained within them, because let's say that I'm the only thing that I know how to do is teach and technical. Don't come to me for counseling. Golly day, that would be bad. So people have those individual callings that the body needs. So we need to recognize the reality of that. You know, I do think, you know what I do? Here's how I do it. I approach music this way. I approach technical this way and some other things. I'll do the best I can until somebody can step in and take my place who can do it better than me. That's where we're at. I'm doing what I'm doing until the next person comes in and can do it better than me, and then I can give it to them. Okay. One of the difficult things in the roles of eldership is when elders have to pronounce judgments and bring correction for the sake of the body and the individual. We've had to do this on several occasions over the last 2 years, and I have to say that, and I'm not saying that this is the way it should be, but I have to say that frequently the people do not like hearing that they need correction. Now, you all may not have ever experienced that, but I have, okay? And no matter how I try to bring it, and I'm trying to improve every time I have to say something to somebody, trying to improve, maybe my results will be better down the road, but once again, this goes back, matter of fact, the next slide has it. See, I do know what I'm saying. Y'all remember a presentation I gave in the spring, summer, was called To Judge or Not to Judge, That is the Question. The reason I said is that the question is because, yes, I've read Shakespeare, and to judge or not to judge is not a question. It's not legally a question in Shakespearean English, the way he wrote it. But I know that, and I changed it purposely to make it into a question so that we could apply it to the text, the scriptures, of how we're supposed to live our lives, not just elders. Okay? Now, back we go. So, the whole thing is that I want to see everybody succeed. Now, I do have an oversight responsibility, but my greater responsibility, unless I'm incorrect, is each individual. I want to see them succeed in being qualified to go into the Shabbat. As Carol mentioned today, what's coming? The 6,000 versus the 1,000. We'll call it the Exodus. In the Exodus, we'll call it the wilderness. 6 days, we go into the seventh. We're living in the sixth day. We would like to live in the seventh day. Will we qualify? That's the question. Only the people who qualify get into the Shabbat. And so, for me, it's making sure that every individual has the best shot at making the seventh day. Now, I'm not saying that should outweigh the body, but I'm just saying I know it's big within me that I want to see everybody make it, and I'm going to do what I can to help them. So that's what that is. All right, so now, continuing with the roles of elders, correction when needed is given with 100% agreement with the elders. I think if something's going to be said, then unless there's a really major reason why it isn't, there should be 100% agreement between the elders with what's going to be done. If there's not, then maybe there's something more that needs to be worked through. Now, one elder may actually deliver the correction. That doesn't mean that that elder decided on their own. The whole idea here is to operate as a team. We're operating as a team for the benefit of the body. Everything's about the benefit of the body. Now, looking at past denominations, have they corrupted this principle? Absolutely. That does not impact what the scriptures require of us. We're supposed to behave. We're supposed to be in a place where we're working together. So I'm just saying what I found. Now, when this actually takes place, appeal is to all the elders. And the elders need to get together, and I feel like, once again, unanimous is what the goal should be. That's how I see it. Matthew 18 is how it works. But that's how it worked when I gave the presentation 6 months ago. It's all about taking the steps to protect the individual and give them the best shot at qualifying for Shabbat. and protecting the body. So, rebuke followed by slander requires confrontation. This is just the way it is. So, for people who, what does the text say? You folk who aspire to be an elder, aspire to a good thing. If you're uncomfortable with confrontation, maybe you're not called to be an elder at this time. I'm just saying. It kind of like comes with a job, and I am the poster child for this. What did I say? I didn't sign up for this. And then somebody had to straighten me out and say, yeah, you did sign up for this. And I was like, man. So, all right. I'd rather just go hide in my ivory temple with Bible works. Carol, I know, yes. You know, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, poor Moses. Poor man. Did he have stress? Did he have upset stomach? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying, that's a goal, to be like Moses. Okay, one with maturity will be quick. Here's something, I'm bringing this out. One with maturity will be quick to examine themselves and determine if some type of course correction is needed. Because we all need course correction on a regular basis. Sometimes it's minor, and sometimes it's more than just minor. And that's fine. Everybody has that all the time. But one of the things that I found in the past, that's changing now, but one of the things I found in the past is that immature people are pretty quick to defend themselves and are not willing to examine themselves to see if, in fact, a course correction is needed. So I'm just saying that this is something that, as an elder, you got to be ready for, because it is so important to protect every instance of flock personnel. What did Yeshua say in Luke 15, first parable? If you have 99 sheep and one goes astray, what do? You leave the pack, you track down the one who went astray, you don't take any garbage from them, you grab them, you throw them on your shoulder, and you take them back to the flock, and when you get them back to the flock, then you party. Okay? That's not in the text. But it works. Okay, so this is where we are, folks. Yeshua sat with publicans and sinners. As elders, should we do less? There are people out there that we run into on I could say, day-to-day basis, but at least on many days, there are opportunities in which we're going to be surrounded by people who are definitely not observing Torah and perhaps even are abusive. I've experienced that. Some of you may have experienced that. Yeshua experienced it. And my impression is that he wasn't really all that fazed. He just kept to the straight and narrow. He said what needed to be said. What they did with it was up to them. It was not his responsibility. All he had to do was he was there. He said his piece. God will judge them what they do with it. It's not his responsibility and it's not mine. I'm just going to give it to you the way it is. So that's why I put, should we do less? I think we should be walking as he walked, so that when an opportunity to put something down, like a seed or something, that we take that opportunity, and who knows who might come behind and water. I've seen it happen before. So, here's one. 1 Corinthians 10:27. If an unbeliever invites you to a meal, KJV has feast. The Greek word for feast is not in the text. If an unbeliever invites you to a meal and you want to go, maybe you're hungry, eat whatever's put before you without raising questions of conscience as regards has it been sacrificed to idols. Not that that comes up in everyday conversation today, but it was a big deal in the first century. So this is, hey, go Don't talk about idols and have words of life and let God do his thing. We'll get to sacrifices of idols later. But I'm just saying, here's an example of go and have words of life. Elders, all right, we need to be set apart. Not a Pharisee, which is separated. We need to have a life that's in order, and Yeshua's was in order. You'll remember that. The Pharisee started out with good intentions. Isn't there a saying something like, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, something like that? They had good intentions because there was a lot of corruption. They wanted to separate themselves from it. They went too far. So, our lives need to be set apart. We need to be ready to go into the midst. Because the day's coming when you're going to have to testify before a government official or somebody else, and you need to just be focused on, I need to have words of life for this event. Let's get this show on the road. If you look at, I didn't bring this one up, but if you go back to Paul, when he went to all the assemblies where he gathered with the elders of all the assemblies, and in every assembly, somebody would prophesy that when he goes to Jerusalem, he's going to be getting bonds and whatever else that was going to be bad. And this upset a lot of people, and I understand that it's okay, but he was okay with whatever it takes for me to be able to go and bring the gospel to the world, I'm going to do. And so he was ready for the opportunity to speak. Doesn't matter. It does not matter what the result is. We're so result-oriented in the U.S., and I'm guilty of this. Results do not matter. You just need to have the word of faith at that time. Okay, my last slide. That was a picture of Phil. That's why they were laughing. No. Okay. 1 Timothy. Faithful is the saying, if anyone aspires to the office of elder, they desire a good work. The Almighty is the one who calls. We saw that in the text. And those in office take note of what's going on and align themselves with the will of God. Finally, some of the tasks are hard, even challenging. So if you're going to do it, what does Julie say? Put on your big boy pants? Something like that. I'm going to talk to her about this cross-dressing issue. That's as an elder. Your big boy dress. That doesn't even sound right. We'll get back to that subject. Attire. Okay, yeah. Okay, so that is the end of this presentation. I'll take questions now.